Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 1st of October. Yes, the fall months continue here, ladies and gentlemen, in 2020. And I do want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, throughout the good old U.S. survey, happy Domestic Violence Awareness Month and also Breast Cancer Awareness Month as well, ladies and gentlemen, two very important, very important causes to me and certainly ones that I'll be advocating for on this program, certainly throughout the month of October and also on my other media platforms. So definitely check it out. Of course, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, love to hear from you. Write to the show. Once again, I love getting emails, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer them quite promptly, to be honest with you. So if you do shoot me an email, I do make it a point to get back to you as quickly as I can. So do that when possible. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, at politicallydirectnj. You could also hit me up as well at my own Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know a lot of you enjoy my Instagram stories, pro wrestling memes, sports, humor, especially politically incorrect humor, some dark humor as well, politics, everything really, folks under the sun. So definitely check it out on Instagram when you can. Also hit me up on Twitter, at Professor Ask Uribe. Great news for everybody. Certainly my social media platforms on Twitter and Instagram specifically continue to get a large amount of followers daily and tons of new likes. So I must be doing something right to get the attention and traffic I'm getting. So again, folks, you know, appreciate your love and support. Also, check out Politically Direct on Facebook. 1,000 plus likes and counting on the page. Appreciate that. And, of course, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, so don't be shy. Call me toll-free, 818-5722. Once again, toll-free number. Tonight I'll take some calls later in the show. We have a great guest coming up in just a few moments, so you do not want to go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Stay right where you are, right here on Block Talk Radio. And also on insidernj.com/podcast. And certainly, once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. And, of course, you can check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to their website, www.insidernj.com, for the best coverage of the political scene, not just throughout the state of New Jersey, but really even at the national political scene. No one does it better than Insider NJ. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, with his outstanding columns. I don't really care too much for his social media lately. He's a little too liberal for my taste. But, Max, I still love you. I'm sure you tolerate me as well with some of my center-right commentary and social media posts. But, folks, you know, our editor-in-chief at Insider NJ, Max Pizarro, as good as it gets here in the state of New Jersey, you definitely want to check out his columns, as well as everybody else on the roster, which includes Jay Lasseter, tremendous, tremendous writer. You certainly want to check out his columns, as well as Fred Snowflake, and also even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes gets on my nerves with his Trump derangement syndrome. But hey, Alan, I love you. And, you know, one of the great things about the program here is we welcome all political thought here on the program and all type of ideologies along the political spectrum. And that's what makes Politically Direct as successful as it's been since its inception in January of 2018. So, again, folks, proud to be part of the Insider NJ team. Check out, again, InsiderNJ.com, upper right-hand corner. You'll see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're waking up right now, even though a lot of us are home because of COVID-19, a lot of you are working remotely from home. That's great if you have the opportunity to do so. Obviously, you know, why not? And, of course, as you are doing so, you're having your morning coffee. Maybe you're watching the morning sports shows like I do. I'm a FS1 fan specifically, so I'm watching, you know, Undisputed. I'm watching The Herd. Sometimes I'll watch ESPN, you know, Stephen A., Max Kellerman just annoy me on First Take, so occasionally I'll watch them. But when I'm doing that, I'm on my phone checking my email just like all of you. And guess what? When you're doing that, the morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. So definitely check that out. And, of course, you'll get all the scoops and all the great journalism that Insider NJ brings you each and every day. Don't forget to follow them on Instagram. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter. And, of course, like them on Facebook as well. Great traffic for them. Again, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, our sponsors, or the staff. So, folks, it's great to have you on here live tonight. Again, happy October. It is October the 1st. Again, just being on the air here with you this evening. And so we have a great guest coming up in just a moment. Folks, as a reminder, October encompasses a few different causes. But here in October, I'll be advocating very heavily, especially on social media, for breast cancer awareness. As you all know, I've been an active volunteer for the American Cancer Society. Since 2008, I've been raising over $50,000 for Making Strides Against Breast Cancer every October during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And also now I'm very dedicated to Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is also in October. So I'll be sharing some stuff on the podcast page as well as on social media about how to get more involved and how to be aware really about two very important causes and two still very serious problems here in the United States. And we'll definitely share more stuff with you throughout the rest of October here on the show. And of course, we'll do it in partnership with Insider NJ. And certainly, I think you'll be pleased to jump on board with us and certainly donate whatever you can or donate whatever time is possible for you to these very vital causes here, not just in New Jersey, folks, but throughout the entire country. So we'll definitely keep you posted here on the podcast as it is October. It's October 1st. I'm delighted my Yankees are on to the division series. It's October. It's baseball. I love it, the baseball playoffs. So I'm excited for that. But what I'm even more excited about, folks, is the great guests and the exclusives that I bring you every week here on Politically Direct. And tonight is no exception, because tonight, right now, joining me here live on Politically Direct is the Communications, Publicity, and Press Chair for the New Jersey Chapter of the NAACP, our good friend, here tonight, folks, on Block Talk Radio, Mr. Marcus Sibley, here on Politically Direct. What's going on, Marcus? Hello, Marcus. Hello, Marcus. I hope you're with us. Sir, hello, Marcus. Are you with us? Hello.
Professor Uribe, let me go ahead and I was listening to you.
Oh, okay.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, Marcus. You with us, sir?
Hello. I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you as well. You're a little. Are you on?
I'm trying to see why.
Are you on the road? Are you on the road?
Not understanding.
Marcus, do me a favor. Just hang up and call back in 2 seconds. Okay, there we go. We'll get Mr. Sibley back on the air. Just bear with us, folks. Again, sometimes technology doesn't cooperate, ladies and gentlemen. That's one of the wonders of the internet, and certainly when we're trying to do stuff here on Block Talk Radio. But again, folks, 818-572-8032. Toll free number. We'll take some calls later in the show. Let's try it again here. Marcus, are you with us?
How about take two? How are we this time?
That's perfect. It's great, brother.
Perfect. Perfect.
Absolutely. Great to have you on. Folks, again, if you're just joining us live right now, here tonight exclusively on Politically Direct is the communications, publicity, and press share for the New Jersey chapter of the NAACP. Mr. Marcus Sibley joining us here tonight. Marcus, how are you, man? How's it going during COVID?
I'm doing great, and Professor, I absolutely appreciate you for having me on. It's a very exciting time for the NAACP in the midst of things that are going on. You know, we know there's
sure.
a lot going on in the world, and the NAACP, we're taking on a challenge. We have our convention coming up on October 10th, and
mm-hmm.
the things that were revealed that many people weren't paying attention to, but now people are paying attention to. We're going to address those things head on October 10th and 11th at our statewide convention. So we're excited. We're excited that there's a passion in the country right now. We're excited
mm-hmm.
that people who haven't really been in the fight before are now in the fight. And we're excited to educate people. So I absolutely appreciate the opportunity to come on your show because, you know, you got the pulse. I was looking through your previous shows, and I like that you tackle – you have your views, and you are
mm-hmm.
giving people opportunity to share their views. And I think that's the most important thing that we can do is listen. Listening is so important.
Yeah, Marcus, listen, I'm with you, man. And, you know, one of the things about this podcast, I think it's very different than what anyone else does in New Jersey, is two things. Number one, being under the Insider NJ umbrella, I think we can both agree that Insider NJ is perhaps the premier journalism in New Jersey. In terms of what we do with our coverage and our columns and everything else. So I'm proud to be part of this umbrella. But two, also, you know, listen, I'm a history professor by day. So I've always been a fan of bipartisan conversations. I think that's how we learn.
Right.
And as you alluded to, I have my views. I'm a center-right guy. But
mm-hmm.
I'm a person that is also – listen, I'm also a dues-paying member of the NAACP, okay? And
right
as someone who and as someone who grew up in a working class family and an area where I live in Hudson County, and I understand the plight of urban communities. You know, I'm Hispanic. I understand
right.
the plight that faces Black and Brown people daily. I know that because before entering academia, I worked in our criminal justice system for 10 years. So, you know, working in corrections, working in the judiciary, in probation, working for the public defender. You know, I went to jails to work with very challenging populations. And so, you know, what I try to do is bring that experience to not just academia as, you know, as an instructor, but also here in media to talk about issues that are important. And, you know, Marcus, you mentioned the convention, and for our audience tonight, folks, if you haven't had a chance, do go to the site www.njsccconvention.org. It is the upcoming NAACP state conference. It is a virtual convention, folks. We have some guest speakers on both Saturday, October the 10th, and Sunday, October 11th. They have Sean King on Saturday, the Reverend Dr. Corey Jones on Sunday. Again, folks, do check out the NJSCconvention.org for more information. It is a virtual convention. You can register still today. But before we get to the convention, Marcus, let's talk some issues here right now in New Jersey. And we know that even pre-COVID, there are still some challenges that face the Black community and also the Brown community too, you know, as well in the state of New Jersey. And, you know, in your capacity as the chair of three, you know, very, I think I would argue, very dynamic type of departments, as they say, communications, press, and publicity, what can you share with our audience tonight about the work that the NAACP in New Jersey has been doing pre-COVID and, of course, the challenging times of, you know, post-COVID?
Well, again, thank you so much for having me on. I mean, that's the first step. The first step is people understanding that for so long, people have gone off of preconceived notions about many different groups, and they don't take a moment out to hear, to listen, to see what's been going on. And that's community as well as outside of our community. The one thing I can say that I can absolutely attest to from being in these rooms, I can tell you over the last 3 months, I myself and the executive members of the organization have been on phone calls with congressmen, mayors, deputy mayors, police chiefs, of county prosecutors. We've been on hundreds of Zooms, hundreds of phone calls. We're doing the work of having the conversations with the people who make decisions. And unfortunately, there's a perception that being outside and doing a protest is the only form of protest and it's the only form of activism. And many people don't realize there are many forms of activism, and all of them work together for a certain goal. So you have the people on the streets who are bringing the attention and the awareness. That's important. That's one level. Then there's the next level. Once the awareness is brought, you need people who have relationships and who can go in those rooms and represent the community and bring about some change on the legislative side. So the NAACP has been doing that for years, but we don't have a problem not being in the forefront. Like, we have no problem being behind the scenes, making sure meetings happen, making sure information is spread, making sure we're working on both sides of the aisle. We have no problem with other people coming along getting the credit, because we know at the end of the day, if you ask the people who are making decisions, who did you speak to last, who did you speak to first, I can guarantee you, first and second going to be the NAACP. And that's why we want to absolutely get the message across that this is a team effort. We know our role. Our role is to make sure we represent in the communities, but also on the legislative side. Make sure our political leaders are aware that people are paying attention. We're holding you accountable, and we're paying attention to your voting record. So our job is to keep people honest. And we need all the other groups to realize we appreciate the work that you're doing on the ground. We're on the ground too, but we're in both atmospheres. So we need everyone to understand that this is a team effort. We've been doing this in New Jersey for quite some time. There are many different legislative victories that NAACP were absolutely at the forefront with, and our partners, the United Black Agenda. That collaboration, that coalition has led to bail reform. It's led to the passage of the independent prosecutor bill. Now we have 83,000 formerly incarcerated people on probation and parole who can now vote. Like, we may not get the headlines, but we're fighting for the people when they don't even realize it's happening.
You know, fair enough. And I certainly want to get into some of those legislative accomplishments, but I think before we get not overly political, but let's focus on some legislative things here that I think that really command my attention, because again, not just only am I a journalist, but I'm also an academic. So, you know, during my years in grad school at Rutgers, I mean, I was very much a policy nut. So like, that's kind of my bread and butter. I'm very much a policy advocate, or at least smart policy. And let me ask you this though, Marcus, again, as someone who worked in the criminal justice system, you know, I'm not one of those sort of career academics that was just in school forever, never had a job, just, you know, was just book smart. You know, I'm a guy that, you know, I worked in jails, man. You know, I worked in both the Hudson County Jail and the Essex County Jail. Okay. And I worked with inmates, I worked with defendants, and I got to know people's stories and situations. So I think, you know, you develop a tremendous amount of empathy when you work in those environments, right?
But
let's say for like a regular working class person. And listen, I think if you, again, having worked in probation, I can speak from the first-hand experience.
When you pay your restitution, when you pay your fines, if you have done your community service, if you have, again, completed your probation successfully, certainly I think the argument for a lot of regular working class people, Marcus, and I don't think this shouldn't be a racial issue, but if we're talking about low-level offenders, I think a lot of people wouldn't be opposed to that. But I think you know where we run into problems, right? I think regular working class people or regular everyday people say, wait a minute. If we're talking about also high-risk offenders, you know, that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, right? And I mean, and I'm trying to phrase it in such a way where, you know, we're talking about someone who shoplifted or someone who, you know, was arrested for low levels of marijuana. I mean, these are people, if you did your time and you paid your fines, you finished your community service, you're on the path to, you know, righteousness and just, you know, being law abiding. You know, no, but I would never, ever discourage and say, you know what, you don't deserve the right to vote. I would say, yes, you've done the work, you've done what you need to do to, you know, reacquire that. But Marcus, you have to understand. I mean, let me rephrase that. I hope you understand that for a lot of people, and regardless if you're white, black, Hispanic, whatever, if you're seeing high-risk offenders reintegrating back into society, those are people sometimes that, whether it's my parents' age group or anyone, is going to look and say, wait a minute, high-risk offenders, I don't know if you deserve the right to vote because you've done some serious harm to society. I don't know if you should be able to recuperate that. Do you hear that?
Right.
I mean, so when you hear that argument.
I hear you. I absolutely hear the argument. I understand the argument. But before I can ever answer that, I always have to take a step back because as a person who was a family therapist, working, going to family court, being in juvenile court, seeing how sentencing works, see, that's where I start, Professor. I always start at the sentencing because a lot of the times people get sentenced in a disproportionate manner. So some people can go get community service, alternative to incarceration programs. Other persons for the same offense can do hard time. That hard time leads to other actions, which leads to other actions, then a snowball effect, and now they become career criminals, and then they're typecast. And my thing is understanding that absolutely that is a reality for people in this country where your sentencing can be completely different and can be absolutely unfair because we will never pretend like the people who are making the sentencing, like they don't have an agenda. We've seen it over and over again. There's many studies showing. So because of that reason, it's difficult for me personally, and I'm speaking from a person, from me personally, I'm not even speaking on behalf of the NAACP, I'm talking about me personally. It's difficult for me situation when I see black and brown people are always painted worse, and some people can do things, and then their offense can be like once they do their time, all of a sudden it's okay for them to reintegrate into society. They've served their time. Like I think you got to take a step back and ask people, then what is the point of jail then? Because if people go to jail and they have a sentence, and then they fulfill their obligation to society. They did their time. How long do you punish people? How long do you put that judgment on people? And for many people, the right to vote is very important on many different levels. So when someone does their time and they come back, you know, so I'm not saying that I'm never going to sit up here and defend someone who's done something horrible. And I understand, rightfully so, people are going to have a hesitation about certain offenses and then people being deemed eligible to come back into society. But I just say, I'm not the one to judge. I don't know what the circumstances were because I can tell you I've seen many different situations where it has escalated because people have been prompted. They've been poked. They've been poked until they've reacted. And now once they've reacted, their lives are changed. And now they're on the other end.
Marcus, I get that. I'm sorry to cut you off. I think the examples I'm trying to refer to are like, you know, very serious, heinous offenders. We're talking about sex offenders. We're talking about
pedophiles. We're talking about, you know, serial rapists. I mean, I think those are the type of high risk offenders I think that people get nervous about when we talk about, you know, okay, these are individuals that they've done their parole and probation. Like, these are the individuals I think that regular everyday people freak out about and say, well, wait a minute, do I want a cop killer or a serial rapist or let's say a trafficker of whatever reason, you know, like, are these the people we want to sort of bestow voting rights to? Again, I think that's where, as you just alluded to, I think if we give clarity, right, I think this is where we can sort of separate the apples from the oranges, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's important just to try to understand that everyone different experiences going to impact what they view as the worst thing to society. You know what I mean? Like, for one person, it could be the examples you use. For other people on the other side of the aisle, it could be, I've watched plenty of videos of this particular person assault people of color, and then when it finally leads up to a murder, they don't even receive jail time. They get desk duty. And for people on that end, they could see that person as the worst person in the world, because that person is being paid and take an oath to protect and serve. And the only thing they're doing is having repeated accounts, repeated abuse, repeated excessive force, and betraying the trust of the community. So for one, people can say that person is doing their job. Another person can say that is a horrible person. And it's unfortunate that the judicial system isn't charging and holding them to account. So to answer the question the best way I can is, I think perception is based on the experiences of the different people. So that's why I can never point a finger and say that this person is justified or they aren't justified in how they view certain things. Like, I think people are entitled to their opinion. I'm a big fan of people having their opinion. Like, there are things like that I saw on when I was looking through your Twitter page that I absolutely don't agree with, but I love the fact that's the beauty. Like, you can have your opinion. The problem is when you try to force your opinion on someone else. And I think that's the road we're going down too often now. I think you should be able to think what you think. I should be able to think what I think. And we can have a conversation. We can disagree. But long as I can hear what you have to say, you hear what I have to say, we can either meet in the middle, or we can just say, you know what, that doesn't work. Let's talk about something else. But when we try to force feed our point of view down a person's throat, that's when we don't have any progress. And I think that's kind of what's happening now, even with the topic you're talking about now. Certain people who have their views about what's really bad. You know what I mean? Let's just take an example. Michael Vick served his time. And there are people to this day, who still will protest him getting certain job opportunities. But there are, as you pointed out, pedophiles, convicted pedophiles that aren't getting the heat that Michael Vick has gotten.
Yeah,
and he has served his time. You know what I'm saying? So I think perception and perspective is so important when we have these conversations, and just for people to realize, you know what? I don't think there's a right or wrong person may be coming from.
Listen, Marcus, that's a fair point. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:25 on the East Coast here, and joining me here on Blog Talk Radio tonight is the distinguished chairman of communications and press and publicity for the NAACP here in New Jersey, Mr. Marcus Sibley, here on Politically Direct. Marcus, that's a great point. Listen, that's a fair point. I think that, as you just alluded to, I think that it's important to, you know, have policy prescriptions and have discussions. I think that's what we're doing. And I think this is how we enlighten people. I think this is how we are able to educate people and either not necessarily convince them one way or another to our side or your side, but I think it's more about having these discussions openly and rationally, you know what I'm saying? Like, calm, man.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like in a way,
you know what I mean? And just to interject, cause I'm sorry, I forgot I don't want to forget this. People always assume that the NAACP is just, this organization that's full of Democrats. That's not the truth at all. We have Democrats,
listen,
we have Republicans, we have independents, you know what I mean? But some people always assume that it's like, no, we have officers who are Republican. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, people remember that they're black first. Like, you can have your political view, but if black people are dying, then you have a responsibility to your people before your party to say that black people are dying and I need to speak up about that. And even if
my party remains silent,
you know what I'm saying? I think that message kind of gets lost. Sometimes, you know, because some people think that.
No, you're right about that.
You know?
No, you're right about that. Yeah. No, listen, you're right. I think that being able to identify people before a party, I think, is important. And we'll get to sort of the political perception that exists about the NAACP in a moment. But just real quick back to legislative issues, because one that's really on my mind, and again, this is it's personal to me because of having worked in the criminal justice system. And, you know, I've talked about this on the air repeatedly. I don't smoke marijuana. I never have. I never will. I have no interest. I prefer to smoke a nice Cuban cigar with a glass of scotch, and that's good for me, okay? Again, now I don't judge anybody for smoking marijuana. What I have not liked and what I have really been angry about for years is because, again, not before being an academic, I was on the ground, okay? I was in jails, working in jails with people, and I saw disproportionately how unfair marijuana laws have been in New Jersey to black and brown people forever, okay? And for me, I had the ACLU executive director on my other show last month, and we were talking about some crazy numbers. Like since 2018, I believe 14,000 plus people have been arrested in New Jersey for low-level marijuana offenses. And, you know, coming up now in 32 days on Election Day, aside from everything else we have to worry about, here in New Jersey specifically, and the reason I know this is because I just got my mail-in ballot today, and I'm looking at the ballot questions at the back of the ballot, and certainly the first and foremost that's on my mind is about legalizing marijuana. I would be shocked, based on polling that I've seen, Marcus, that I'd be shocked if it doesn't pass. But as I've told my students, and I said this to them back in March, you know, pre-COVID, while we were still in the classroom, and I said, listen, one of the bigger issues this year will be not just about electing a president, about, you know, senators and representatives in the House, whatever. It's here in New Jersey. It's about legalizing marijuana. And I said to my students, listen, by the way, it, most likely it'll pass, but I don't watch any. I was like, kids, don't just wake up Wednesday morning and say, oh, my God, marijuana is legal in New Jersey. Let me go smoke a blunt. No, you got to chill out. You got to wait until the legislature sits down and obviously has to go through the regulations, aspects of decriminalization, aspects about taxation. Marcus, my biggest concern, and this goes beyond party, like you just mentioned right now, I don't trust Trenton as far as I can throw them because they can't get anything right. Think about it. Like, you know, when Governor Murphy took office, one of his biggest policy prescriptions was, listen, we're going to legalize marijuana within the first 90 days of my administration. Well, that didn't go anywhere. It took a full year to raise the minimum wage. And March of 2019, both chambers in the legislature had a chance on the floor to pass votes. They didn't. They passed the buck and said, oh, we'll wait until November 2020. Meanwhile, we're still incarcerating black people. We're still incarcerating brown people because of these antiquated drug laws. Okay, fine. It should pass on November 3rd. I just don't trust the legislature to get this right. I mean, listen, not to offend the audience, Marcus, Trenton could mess up a wet dream. Okay, that's how incompetent Trenton has been about stuff like this, and I don't think it's going to change come 2021 because they're going to have to sit down at the table like adults and figure this out, man. I don't see it happening.
I can, and I appreciate you being candid about that, and you know, I think that's important. I think these conversations are important because there's so many different perspectives about why people have certain views about marijuana. And I mean, the fight that we've had even internally and even in the community is letting people know that our stance of being one of the organizations at the table fighting for this has nothing to do with views about the drug itself. Our main view is because this system is designed the way that it is, black, as you pointed out, black and brown people are targeted and are having their lives absolutely impacted because of low-level drug offenses. That is a fact. So regardless you know what I'm saying, regardless of feelings, and regardless of how people, whatever their personal or religious or whatever their views are, the reality is right now, until something changes, our communities are being absolutely dismantled because our people are being taken from their families because of low-level drug offenses. So our stance is we want to legalize this so that we can stop that. I'm not going to speak to Trenton. You know, that'll be something I can't even leave if I were president, is on at a later date. I'm not going to speak to that, but I'm just going to speak to the fact that we want people, when they get that question, we want people to vote in favor of it, because at the end of the day, that could be your nephew, that could be your son, that could be your daughter, that could be your grandchild.
Yeah, absolutely.
That life
absolutely.
Is completely, their trajectory is changed because now they have to deal with something that otherwise it wouldn't have to be there. So our stance is, we want people to realize that we're not against or in favor. We don't have an opinion about the drug itself. Our focus is on changing the policy so that lives don't continue to get impacted. So, I mean, that's
Marcus,
I'm sorry, I can't
Marcus,
say more, but,
no,
you know, that is where
no,
we are.
Fine. No, Marcus, listen, that's fine, and I'm with you. I'm just simply saying that, like, listen, again, having worked for 10 years in the system and seeing disproportion, and I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, listen, if you're caught with a low amount of marijuana, your life is basically ruined. Okay, you're going to lose your financial aid in college. You're going to have an arrest record that's going to prohibit you from possibly gaining employment. It's going to hinder you in a lot of other ways. And it's just it's unjust and punitive. And I'm hoping that when people vote in November, that, you know, obviously they'll vote yes. Now, again, as I tell my kids all the time, listen, you know, Wednesday morning, the legislature is going to have to roll up their sleeves and say, okay, how do we tackle this? How do we tax it? Because Trenton loves to tax everything. How do we regulate this? You know, how do we make it affordable to where, like, okay, make it more, I guess, you know, you want to motivate people to not go to the black market to get something that's regulated to something that isn't going to be full of intoxicants or other contaminants. Right. You know, you kind of want this to be safer, almost the same way with tobacco and alcohol, essentially, you know?
Right.
You know, we don't want people bootlegging, for God's sakes, in your backyard. You know, we want this regulated, but at the same time, you want it to be affordable. I'm just concerned, though, Marcus, and again, as you mentioned about the NAACP in New Jersey, I'm just concerned that whether or not, you know, maybe the organization – you know, do you think they've been forceful enough and maybe motivating through, you know, online campaigns? Again, it's impossible to have rallies and events because of COVID. But do you think the NAACP in New Jersey could maybe do more in this short amount of time to really motivate people?
I mean, I would say that we've been in this fight for quite some time. And and to answer your question, I mean, is there more we can do? Of course. And we're going to – but the thing is – despite whatever hurdles that may come because of COVID, this is something that we've been fighting for quite some time, and we're going to continue this fight, because the other important piece about it is how disrespectful this can be. And what we've been fighting for are the social parts of the bill, so that the communities who've been affected by this pointless war on drugs, how can we make sure that these communities are made whole? Because what's going to happen with so many different industries, people are going to come in and start making a whole lot of money off of this. So while black and brown people are still in jail, there's going to be people getting rich off the thing that put them in jail. So that's what we're pushing for, expungement.
Right.
Like, we want expungement of records. Like, if you're going to start making money off of this, we want the people who went to jail for the thing you're making money off of, let their records get expunged. Like, it's so much more than just saying legalize marijuana. It's from the NAACP standpoint, it's not only making it legal so that our people aren't going to jail, but it's a full circle approach to realize that this is something that could make a lot of money. And if the people who have been disproportionately impacted for so many years are left out of that equation, it will be a travesty. It will absolutely be a travesty. If we don't have black owned dispensaries, like,
that's fair.
They're
that's
out there.
Fair.
Like, why wouldn't we have a piece of the pie if this is now going to be legal? Like, we want the same. We don't want extra. We want the same opportunities to build wealth, to have our families be able to grow and have generations of wealth. We want the same opportunity. We don't want anything extra.
Yeah.
We want the same
no,
opportunity.
Fair.
You know, to become successful in this country. So with that being said,
absolutely.
I hope everyone is watching this. I'm just say this really quick. I want everybody to make sure when you do vote, please turn that page and make sure you vote for this, because that could be your next powerful leader who could have hit the scene 10 years earlier if they don't get this hiccup because of these pointless low-level drug offenses. So
yeah,
let's make a good decision.
Fair. No, absolutely, Sir Marcus. I'm with you, man. Preach on that. That's a tremendous point. I think I'm hoping that, you know, voters in New Jersey, aside from everything that's on the ballot that they have to endure, as you said, flip the page over, and it's the very first ballot referendum there. You know,
right.
Take a second, take your pen, fill in the oval under yes, and, you know, and I understand that at least in New Jersey, it's a very different state than others, Marcus, because, you know, again, I think a lot of legislators look at this as, you know, a lot of urban areas in New Jersey will be impacted, as you said, whether or not we'll open new dispensaries. Listen, I would assume that some legislators who tend to be a little more liberal have chosen to sort of abstain from this. I think a lot of them are concerned about the perception of, well, you know, do we want to glorify this? Do we want to, you know, have our densely populated neighborhoods maybe, you know, full of dispensaries or sort of, you know, normalize? Because remember, man, there's a generational gap here. Okay. I mean, I don't know how old you are.
Right.
I'm not going to ask you, but, you know, try having this conversation with your parents and try having conversation and trying to convince them, like, hey, listen, you know, science and medicine will tell you that it's, you know, it's not harmful, nowhere near as harmful as alcohol, which is regulated, tobacco, which is regulated and taxed, or other harder drugs. But listen, that's a tough conversation to have with your parents, with older
mm-hmm.
family members, with legislators. So I think it's something to definitely keep an eye on as we 32 days away. We'll see what happens on election day. Now, Marcus, let me ask you this, because I know that, as you alluded to, the NAACP, whether it's in New Jersey or nationally, is not a political organization per se. You know, they're not, they don't identify. But I think especially in recent years, we have seen our political climate change rapidly. It's become very polarized. I think it's been polarized for some time. I think some people might make the accusation it's been polarizing because of who is sitting in the Oval Office right now. But I would argue it's been like that pre the 45th president, I think, for some time. You know, whether it's been exacerbated by social media or the media in general, I think we've seen that it's been polarizing for some time. You know, right now politically, though, Marcus, I got to ask you, man, because it seems in our political climate that, you know, the president of the United States right now, if you look at some polling among black voters and many in the black community, it's a little bit higher than it was in 2016, whether, you know, it depends on who you see in the mainstream. But a lot of people might argue, Marcus, that the ROI, the return on investment, for many in the black community who have pledged a lot of devotion and have pledged allegiance to the Democratic Party for decades, a lot of, let's say, openly black conservatives have come out and said, your ROI has not been great. I'm not saying the president's perfect. I'm not saying the Republican Party's perfect. But embracing perhaps conservative ideas, maybe economically or some other ideas, might be better for the black community. There are more and more black conservatives than ever now, and you see them growing, especially on social media. How do you view that? Because it's polarizing, and there seems to be gaining some momentum. Because, again, this president has a higher approval rating with the black community, higher than any Republican in the last 30 years. How do you explain that?
Well, first I'd say the NAACP is a nonpartisan organization.
I have to
put that out there. We are involved in political situations because politics are everywhere. Politics impact every part of society. But
absolutely,
we are a nonpartisan organization. But also, with that being said, I think the important thing that I want to get across is if 2020 has taught people anything, it's what you prove, your actions have to be your calling card, your voting record are your calling card. We don't have allegiance to anyone. We're nonpartisan. Our job is to point out the things that impact our community and lobby for those things. And regardless of the side of the aisle that a person falls on, our job is to hold them accountable for what they're doing or what they're not doing. for our position is we really don't care who you represent. Are you voting for things that impact the black community? Are you abstaining on things that you need to be voting on? What is your voting record? Are you consistently showing that the things you ran on, the promises you made, are they consistent with your voting record? So for us, we really don't care what side you're on, and that's going to increase going forward. This year, the 2020, the year of perfect vision, we're starting to see how many people are more concerned with symbolism and how many people are concerned with actual change. And now we have an opportunity where people are saying the mantra of Black Lives Matter. Now we're telling people to prove it. If you say it, prove it. Show me. I don't need to hear it. I need to see it. Show me. Going to a street painting, regardless of what party you belong to, that does not show a dedication to Black lives. A dedication to Black lives is, what are you going to do when things are happening and we need you to pass legislation that are going to impact our communities, housing situations? Are you going to vote for bills where landlords are taking advantage of black and brown people in these areas during COVID-19? Are you going to vote on those things? Are you going to vote on anything where, even if we go from an environmental justice standpoint, where you have different parts of the state where you have polluters and they're consistently targeting these black, predominantly black and brown areas, bringing this pollution, causing cancer, causing asthma, causing all these respiratory issues. Are you going to have the courage to say that's not right and we're not going to give you permits for you to continue on? Like, it's about courage. We're looking for people with courage and integrity. And quite honestly, I don't care what party you're from. If you're not showing courage and you're not fighting for the people who are consistently being disrespected and disenfranchised, then we're going to give you the same fire. So there is no connection to any party. We are nonpartisan. We are about fairness and we're about progress. And anyone who isn't helping us make progress, we are the advancement of people. We're looking for the advancement. If you're not helping us advance, then you're just pacifying us. And we will not stand for that anymore.
Well said, Marcus. Let me ask you this, because, again, as I mentioned, my day job is, you know, I am an academic, I'm a history professor, and part of my day job, man, is grading. And, you know, when you look at the, you know, again, we'll just keep it here in New Jersey. You know, when we look at the legislature right now as presently constituted, let's say for some time, you know, what, as an active member of the NAACP and the hierarchy, again, I know you just mentioned it, it's a nonpartisan organization. Do you care to maybe give a grade to the legislature here in New Jersey for some time in terms of how their job performance has been in helping black and brown communities for some time? I mean, you know, do you care to give a grade on the air here with me?
Well, I wouldn't give a grade, but I would also say I just think the country is showing us that there's room for improvement for everyone.
Okay.
There's videos every day showing us that we have work to do and we need to do the work, because speeches that we heard from leaders and 40 years ago, if you turn it on and close your eyes, you wouldn't know it happened 40 years ago. Like, for that, for those same things to be relevant in 2020 is ridiculous. So I won't give a grade, but I would say there's work to do on all around. All parties involved, there's more work for all of us to do.
Okay, fair enough. What's been the relationship of the NAACP in New Jersey with Governor Murphy? I know that Governor Murphy certainly is someone who is very different than his predecessor. Certainly, it's fair to say, you know, his predecessor, Chris Christie, was different than his predecessor, and so on and so on. But relatively now, in the contemporary sense, what's been the relationship between the NAACP here in New Jersey and Governor Phil Murphy? Has it been amicable? Has it been productive? Has it been maybe lagging? I mean, how would you sort of assess the rapport and or lines of communication with Governor Murphy at this time?
Well, I would say I believe that answer to our state conference president, but I can speak to the fact that I'm appreciative of there having lines of communication. Everything is a negotiation. Everything, you can't always get what you want, but we're grateful that we have an opportunity to reach out to the governor when we have to, our president. State Conference President Richard Smith has an opportunity to reach out to our governor and other members high-ranking members of different community groups, different parts of the legislature. We're fortunate that we can have these conversations because, again, it all comes back to having conversations. So we're grateful that whether we agree or disagree on certain issues, we're grateful that we have an opportunity to sit at the table and speak with our governor.
Well, Marcus, let me just say this. We're having a great conversation tonight, man. Listen, you got to hook it up for me, man. You got to speak to President Smith. You got to get him on this show here with me, man. Can you at least promise me that or do your best here? Can you
I can promise you I can try. Because what I can also say is our state president, our vice president, our different committee members, we have been very busy. We've been very busy.
Oh, no, I get it.
And it's the good work, though. You know, it's the good busy.
No, I understand.
Busy,
I understand.
Pushing people to pass legislation. So I have made them aware that you have an interest in an interview. And like I told you before, the moment he gives me the green light that he has some free time, I'm definitely going to shoot that information to you. Because, again, I think it's very important for people to hear from our president and to be able to speak in a space where all points of views are respected. I think that's the only way we move forward.
Okay. Well, listen, Marcus, again, bro, I'll buy you lunch. You know, just help me out here. Let's see what we can do. Okay. Now, Marcus,
absolutely.
getting back to certainly issues that the NAACP really conveys, and, you know, it is 2020, as you said. It's a very polarizing political climate, and this is even before COVID. You know, as we entered the year, we knew it was going to be a very tumultuous political year. We know that Black Lives Matter, the movement, has come under a lot of scrutiny. We know that it has been under the microscope for, I guess, the optics, right? I think depending on who you are, how you view BLM, the movement, as opposed to how you view issues in the Black community. I'll just give you an example. And again, this is probably where, I mean, I don't want to get too political with you, but, you know, I'm someone who grew up in a working class neighborhood. I, again, having worked in the criminal justice system, having worked with, you know, disadvantaged populations, having worked with people that have been disenfranchised, I know about that. Okay. Like, I'm not just, I'm not just some career academic that just worked, you know, studied all his life and never was on the streets, was never out, you know, on the ground. I lived this, man. So I saw it with my own eyes. Proud member of the NAACP. I love paying my membership dues. I'll continue doing that because I believe as a whole, man, that the organization is doing good work. But this is where it gets complicated now. And I don't want to racialize this too much, but I'll use the example as a Latino, especially in the Latino community, we're looking at it where, Marcus, I care about Black communities. I care about Black lives. I care about issues that affect Black people every day. But can I separate that from the fact that along policy lines or some ideological lines, I can say the BLM movement or maybe at the hierarchy, it doesn't sit well with me. Not because, and listen, mind you, that doesn't make me racist or bigoted. Of course not. People like my parents, they just say, Hey, listen, we care about Black people. We don't want Black people dying unnecessarily, unjustly. Same thing with brown people. But there seems to be a concern out there, Marcus, that at the upper levels or maybe some of the message of BLM, the movement, not Black lives are important. They matter. No one's saying they don't. But a lot of people, I think, especially whether white communities or Latino communities, are concerned that maybe there is a radical tone at the upper levels of BLM, the movement, where, you know, you look at their website or you look at some of the rhetoric over, you know, it's been around for 7 years. Some people might just say, listen, we respect Black lives. We want to help Black lives prosper. But there's some radical tone, a little bit of a radical tone to the rhetoric of the hierarchy of the movement. How can we separate that? Because I think it's really dividing people.
The first thing I would say is I can't speak for the Black Lives Matter organization.
Sure.
I'm a member of the NAACP. I can't speak for the organization. Other thing I can touch on is Black Lives Matter organization is different than Black Lives Matter movement. People who are screaming that Black Lives Matter, very few of them even know the history on the actual organization, because they don't really care about that. They care that this is a rallying cry. We need to prove that Black Lives Matter. If Black Lives Matter, why are people continually getting away with murdering Black people and not having any consequences? So there's a rallying cry around that that has nothing to do with the organization. So I can't speak to the organization. I can't speak to the messages that are coming from there. I focus on what Black people and brown people and people of all shades are finally saying, that how in the world can, in 2020, when there's video footage, matter of fact, outside of that, how in the world, while people are protesting excessive force, how can they be assaulted? And how can other people show up to protest with guns and not have any provocation? I mean, without any provocation, Black people can be impacted. But people can come to events with guns, incite violence, and still don't get in trouble. So many people are tired of the optics of that, and they're saying, how in the world can we say that Black Lives Matter when Black peaceful people are being hurt? Black people in our justice system are being hurt. Black people who are trying to move into certain neighborhoods, are that redlining is still happening. That there's exposés in 2020 of realtors showing certain people certain areas because they don't want Black people in those neighborhoods. All across the board, Black people are still being disrespected. So the rallying cry is that if Black Lives Matter, why isn't it being proven? Why are we still having to say that? And to take things another step further, though, sure. I do want to touch on something, because I think there's a huge hypocrisy that comes to that whole idea of violence and rioting. And we see violence all the time. There's violence when people don't have things go their way. Violence is created all the time. But unfortunately, people who control the media can say that these people were protecting their land and they were exercising their right. But when Black people and brown people go in the public and just stand up and say, it isn't right that we're being murdered, and when violence happened because there are clashes, then that act is now unacceptable. I think we have to stop being so hypocritical. Like, as Dr. King said, riot is the language of the unheard. Like, it's, if people being heard, they wouldn't have to do something extreme to get your attention. So I just hope that all the people, and I'm seeing so many commercials now pointing out the violence. One thing I want to say is, if conditions weren't present in these communities, people wouldn't have to scream about it. The second thing is, you can't ignore the constant footage that are coming out of these different rallies all across the country, where it's peaceful until people who aren't Black and brown do something to make it escalate. Like, it's plenty of videos I've seen, plenty. And we ignore that. We absolutely ignore that it's not the Black and brown people who are trying to make things escalate, because we know once it escalates, we're the one who's going to jail. So we don't go in there trying to make things escalate. We go in there just trying to be heard. There's so much hypocrisy when it comes to how violence is seen and how violence should be, the consequences for violence. There's so much hypocrisy in that. I just hope people just take a step back and just see how hypocritical that sounds. Like, I'm coming to a peaceful protest with signs and I get hit upside the head. People come to the peaceful protest with guns and people are offering them water. Like, that's the country we live in. I think it's important for us to realize that things are absolutely hypocritical, and we're not ever going to get anywhere as a people, as a human race, until we start pointing out the realities of the disrespect and the realities of the treatment, unfair treatment, and that we won't have to say Black Lives Matter if the world acted like Black Lives Matter. You know what I mean? Like, it's a simple formula. It's a very simple formula. You know, it's like, I don't understand why it's so hard to see, but it is. But just to get back to your original question, like, I can't speak about the movement. I just speak about that term. The term is a rallying cry for people of all walks of life. professing that Black lives do matter, and it's about time that our laws and our policies and the consequences reflect that.
I understand. And listen, I think they're all fair points you just made. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 10 o'clock on the dot here on the East Coast. And joining us here tonight on Blog Talk Radio is the distinguished chair concerning communications, press, and publicity for the New Jersey chapter of the NAACP, the very honorable Marcus Sibley, joins us tonight here on Politically Direct. Marcus, I want to give you the floor here because I know that the New Jersey NAACP convention is coming up on October the 10th and 11th. It is certainly very different this year because it'll be done virtually. Before we get into the more specific aspects of the convention, what has been, not necessarily a success, because it's always been successful to my knowledge, but how, actually, here's a better question, I'm sorry. How challenging has it been for the organization to fundraise in recent years? Again, this is pre-COVID, when it comes to mobilizing interest, when it comes to fundraising, getting advertisers and sponsors, how challenging has that been, again, pre-COVID?
I mean, I would say pre-COVID, I think we run into the same pitfalls that every organization runs into. You know, funding is important, and getting out to sponsors and maintaining those relationships so that your sponsors can still make sure that you can do the business that you're doing. That's an important yearly battle that has to happen. So we're very fortunate to have some great sponsors who consistently make sure that we have what we need to continue to work. So we're absolutely grateful for our sponsors. You can visit our website, njscnacp.org. That's njscnacp.org. And you can see the list of our sponsors on the website. So it's a challenge. Since COVID, it's also been a challenge because you can't do, you know, the normal meet with people, shake their hand, make sure, you know, so that makes it a little difficult. So that's why we're just grateful for our sponsors who have continued to remain with us. And we will be looking to establish new relationships because, like one of the features that we're having at our convention, we have scholarships. We want to make sure that we can provide opportunities for our young people, and you need funds to make sure you have scholarships. So our drive to always have sponsors, that'll never stop because there's work that always needs to be done. So, again, we're grateful for the sponsors that we have and for all the organizations that are having difficulty. Just don't give up, because at the end of the day, you never know whether you are used to doing 15 scholarships and now you only can do three. Do the three. You don't know how that's going to impact the life. And then the next year, more sponsors can come in, and then you can maybe get back to the 15. But the important thing is, while you have an opportunity to be a beacon of light for people, you absolutely do that. So we're very grateful at our convention. We will have scholarship opportunities. And more important than that, scholarships are important, but information is important. That's why the name of this convention is the State of Black New Jersey 2020. We're going to be speaking on issues that specifically impact the Black community so that people can get resources. They can get information. Resources are so important. Like, even, you know, during this this pandemic, there have been so many grant opportunities for small businesses, and many people don't know about it. And we've been trying our best to make sure that we get that information out so that we aren't left out. That's another one of our pushes. Like, we want everybody to be aware of the things, the opportunities, the lifelines that are out there. So we year round, we try to push out information so that people can excel and they can level the playing field from a business standpoint. So yeah, it's sponsorships is difficult, but whatever we get, we're always going to make sure we maximize whatever we have.
Well, listen, Marcus, and that's great. Again, from my audience tonight here, folks, if you haven't checked it out, do go to the website, www.njscconvention.org. Again, on Saturday, October 10th, the keynote speaker will be Sean King. I know he's a best-selling author,
at times can be a controversial figure, but certainly a guy that is quite the advocate, and we see that all the time on social media. And then on Sunday, October 11th, will be the Honorable Reverend Dr. Corey Jones. He is a senior pastor from the Tabernacle Baptist Church in Burlington, all the way down South Jersey. He'll be the keynote speaker on Sunday, October 11th. You did allude to a little bit, Marcus, about, you know, the theme will be State of Black New Jersey. During those 2 days, though, very quickly, what can you tell our audience about what's going to be on the agenda? I know it's a virtual convention. It's not like the traditional one where you go and sit down and meet people and, you know, you can sit down in a rec, you know, an auditorium or a rec room or, you know, a convention center type of atmosphere. What can our listeners tonight learn about? What are some of the biggest points on the agenda for those 2 days? Like, what are the bullet points? What are the topics and themes that are really going to stand out, man?
Well, I would say absolutely. Sean King, as our keynote for that first day on that Saturday, is going to be absolutely powerful. He has a brand new book out. Mm-hmm. He's a co-founder of the Grassroots Law Project. So if anyone has been on social media following, every time there's been injustice in the Black community, one of the main proponents for getting that message out has been the Grassroots Law Project. So we're very appreciative for having Sean King on our bill. We're going to have a presentation by United Black Agenda Coalition. That's going to be great information. We have our presentation about criminal justice. So again, we're touching on things that are very important in our community, especially in 2020. So we're going to do criminal justice, housing, about a moratorium, when the moratorium ends and the evictions continue, what's next. We're going to have our health presentation, New Jersey and COVID-19. And then we're going to have the next day with Reverend Dr. Corey L. Jones, we're going to have civil rights from the pulpit. So he's going to be speaking about the importance of the church and their role historically and currently with civil rights, and how it's important that our religious institutions remain steadfast and remain at the forefront of our civil rights fight. And then we're going to have our Armed Forces and Veterans Affairs presentation, the environmental justice presentation, which is very important because what we do know is environmental racism is real. And in New Jersey, as well as every other state, it impacts Black and brown communities first and worst. So it's very important that people pay attention to environmental justice issues. And then we're going to have education. And then we're going to end it. And I want to send you this information too. At 2:30 on Sunday, we're going to have our press conference and wrap up. So we want to have a press conference at the end. Normally, we would do the press conference in the beginning, but this year we're changing it up. We're going to do the press conference at the end to do a wrap-up of everything that we discussed. So I think it's important for people who – I mean, I think it's important for everyone to come, but I think it's even more important for people who don't agree with some of the things to join. Like, I think – like, I watch shows that are different from my preference all the time, because I want to learn. I want to see how people view things. I think it's
absolutely
important. So I invite any and everyone to go to njscconvention.org, register, $30 for 2 days, and you have a best-selling author as your keynote. You can't beat it. Mm-hmm. You're not even going to realize that you're home. You're going to feel like you're there, because we have our convention video conferencing team who are doing a great job to make sure it feels just like everyone is there. So I'm looking forward to it, very, very much looking forward to it. And more than anything else, I just want people to get the information. Just so much information that's out there from the health standpoint, from the housing standpoint, criminal justice, and people just don't know, because we don't control the media. We don't have the means to put the message out and to put it out consistently. So this is our opportunity to put out information that impacts our community with no spin, just raw facts, real information, and with the goal of people walking away on October, the evening of October 11th, walking away wanting to get in this fight in some way, wanting to call their legislators to demand what their community should have, wanting to join up in more committees within their local branch. Like, just people ready to work, ready to do that good work that the God rest his soul, John Lewis, spoke about.
Okay, fair enough, though, Marcus. And folks, again, you know, obviously, as Marcus just so eloquently just alliterated for us here, the convention coming up,
Also, ladies and gentlemen, if you can, this is where I plug my guests and their organizations. And again, I'm a dues paying member, but folks, if you go to NAACP.org, you click on the join button. There are a lot of different membership types there. And for a lot of my audience that are adults, 21 and over, it's only $30. And listen, as someone who, you know, understands that times are tough economically for a lot of New Jerseyans, regardless of along racial lines, it doesn't matter, black, brown, white, men, women, doesn't really matter. I know times are tough, but folks, if you do have even the smallest disposable income, and in the mornings, if you're going to work and you get that morning coffee, do me a favor. Instead of getting it 5 days a week, do me a favor and just get it 2 or 3 days a week and take those other 2 days, add them all up at the end of the month, and you'll probably get $30. Do me a favor, folks. Go to NAACP.org, click on the join button. You'll see the membership types. It's a worthwhile membership dues. I love paying them. And for any of you that are looking to do the same, hey, listen, maybe, you know what, maybe gamble less this football season, okay? You know, God knows my Cowboys are annoying me. So you know what, if you have to bet less on your team this year on FanDuel or whatever, DraftKings, hey, take that money, put it to good use, donate to the NAACP. It goes a long way with helping their mission statement and, of course, helping with resources and other programs that they need to run. And obviously, folks, it doesn't run on air. It needs paper. So if you can donate, I urge you to do that. Again, just, you know, like I said, you know what? Put a dollar a day away for a month straight. And guess what? At the end of the month, you'll have $30. Boom. There's your membership dues for the year. So do that.
There's your membership dues. But also, exactly. I would tell people this. But here's the one thing I definitely want to get across if I can.
Sure.
Getting a membership is great, but having bodies is important. Showing up to an event, like, we want people, like, and again, I understand if people have hardships. If you don't have $30, please still follow our page. Follow our handle is at NJNACP on all social media. Follow us. If I say that we're going to be calling this legislator, you don't have to be a member to call. If I'm saying we're going to show up at the state house and meet with this legislator, you don't have to be a member for that. We just need bodies. We need people from all walks of life, because what has to happen, Professor, what absolutely has to happen is people have to start becoming the change they want to see. We can't continually point at what's not happening and how it's not happening, and we're sitting on the couch. We have to get involved. I don't care what organization you're in, but you need to be out making sure that the future is better than the present. That has to be the goal. We should not be okay.
Yeah, that's right.
We should not be okay with our future generation still having to deal with qualified immunity. No, we need to fight that today. Today we have to fight to make sure that people are held accountable for what is happening in our community. So we can't just point the finger. We can't expect people magically to do the right thing. We have to mobilize. We have to organize. We have to activate. So I appreciate you giving the plug. But again, whether you join our organization or anyone, get involved. Be the change that you want to see.
Yeah. You know what, Marcus, and that's right. And folks, again, as Marcus just alluded to, if you cannot donate, again, economically, if times are tough for you, you cannot do that. There are other ways you can get involved. Again, the mailing address for the NAACP in New Jersey is 4326 Harbor Beach Boulevard. It's 775 in Brigington, New Jersey, 08203. Their phone number is 609-310-0211. Once again, 609-310-0211. And certainly the email is admdirector.njscnaacp@gmail.com. Again, folks, their social media handles on Facebook, they're, you know, at NJNAACP, the same thing on Twitter, NJNAACP, same thing on Instagram, folks, NJNAACP. You know, Marcus, I feel I could have you on the show for 3 more hours and we still wouldn't get to everything, bro. but before I let you go, just a couple of things here. I do want to wish you the best of luck. I'll certainly do my best to be there virtually on the 10th and 11th. I have a couple of other commitments production-wise because of not just what I do with the podcast here with Insider and Jay, but I do studio shows as well. Let me ask you bro, because I do a show on Monday nights called Real Talk, the Eisen and Jay. It's a growing online news platform in New Jersey. I'm looking to have some guests in October and November, certainly after the convention. I want to be able to get you on. It streams live on Monday nights. It's got great traffic. I'll definitely talk to you off the air because I'd love to have you on. We can continue this conversation certainly in a Zoom type meeting. But before I let you go, again, I want to thank you for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck on the upcoming convention. But this is the part of the show, man, where, like, I've been talking with you for, like, an hour, and I've been the one asking questions. Guess what? Now I give you the floor, young man. You want to pick my brain? You want to ask me questions? What's up, man? Go for it.
Okay. So, and this is great. Thank you, by the way. I'm excited. I get to ask you a question. I get to put the interviewer's hat on. But no, seriously, my question is, because you're speaking about people from different generations and how, based on your walks of life, how you can view different issues that we're currently fighting. My question to you would be, how do you reach older Republicans, older Democrats, older Hispanics, older Blacks, older White, and get them on board? Because I see you're very passionate about certain topics, criminal justice, marijuana legislation. How do you think the best way to target them to kind of get them on board?
I would just argue, again, this is just from personal experience because, you know, I'm a guy that, you know, my dad is over 70. And, you know, my dad's old school Latino, okay? It's hard to sort of sell him on the fact that there are medicinal and scientific benefits, that, let's say, to marijuana, for example. You know, for example, I'll just a quick story. A couple of years ago, I brought to his attention that the NFL during the Super Bowl, it was discovered that they chose to not allow a medicinal marijuana commercial on the air, where I believe one of the organizations had, you know, they were willing to pay the $2 million, right, for a 30-second commercial in the Super Bowl. And apparently the NFL denied it. Meanwhile, they allowed like 9 beer commercials. And I was saying to my father, and I'm like, number one, I mean, I'm a little biased because I'm a Cowboys fan. So half my roster tends to get suspended for marijuana use in the last decade. So I'm a little annoyed. But more importantly, I said, you know, it's really hypocritical of the NFL to not allow a medicinal marijuana commercial, but they'll have 9 beer commercials, which when we all know that beer is immensely more harmful for you, alcoholism still is a very serious problem in this country. You know, they don't longer have tobacco commercials during the Super Bowl, but one time they were. And meanwhile, you know, something like medicinal marijuana is very beneficial. Why not encourage that? But instead, the NFL would rather have their players hooked on pain pills, Vicodin, and other awful ways of self-medication. But when it comes to medicinal marijuana, God knows these guys, Marcus, are killing themselves every week, and the pain management has to be atrocious for them. Why not give them options? Why not allow medicinal marijuana? And now all of a sudden, Commissioner Roger Goodell, in his infinite wisdom, the scumbag that he is, now conveniently is saying, oh, well, we're going to explore medicinal marijuana. Give me a break, bro. Like, you've known the science forever. It's there. But now all of a sudden, like, oh, well, we'll consider it. So I'm having this argument with my father. I'm like, Dad, like, I don't care. Like, I don't have a dog in this fight because I don't smoke marijuana. I don't care. But you understand that, like, why would you want more people hooked on pain pills? Why would you want more people hooked on Vicodin, which we know is highly addictive, it is highly harmful for you? Why not have medicinal marijuana available so these guys don't go to sleep in pain and wake up miserable? Like, it makes no sense when science and medicine is telling you marijuana medicinally is beneficial. So eventually, I think after a lot of, like, back and forth, like, I kind of got my dad on board, but that took a long time of, like, mind you, and I'm an academic, so my dad, you know, the first reaction would be like, oh, well, you know, oh, you're a professor, you think you know everything, you know, like most people would say that. I'm like, no, it's not about being a professor and knowing everything, which I know a lot of things, but that's not the point. The point is that, you know, you have to have the conversation. You have to be willing to say, this is science, this is medicine, this is what's being proven by doctors. I think we need to embrace it. Like, why keep pushing a culture of pills, man? Why keep pushing a culture of, like, Vicodin and painkillers when, guess what? You know, whether – let's say even you – I'm not saying you're not an athlete, but if you're experiencing, I don't know, arthritis or you're experiencing discomfort, why not experiment with CBD oils or medicinal marijuana? Why go to your doctor and say, oh, you know, doc, you know, I'm feeling pain and wherever. Hey, can you, like, prescribe some ibuprofen or some Vicodin? Like, don't you think we should be encouraging people to not self-medicate like that? So those are the conversations I think that we have to have, and they're difficult.
I agree.
They're difficult with older people because, you know,
I was just agreeing with you. I think those conversations are the most difficult, but they have to be had. And the parallel I'm going to make, and this is why I asked you that question, because we live in a country where legislatively it used to be in the law that black people were 3/5 of a human being. So there are people who have grown up in with that, and now they still believe that. And our fight, and this is why I was asking you that question, like, how do you do it? Because what we have to do daily is fight to prove to people that we are fully human beings. This is why so many things can happen, because in their eyes, we're not fully human beings. So we can be targeted. We can be shot. We can have very high black maternal mortality and infant mortality because we can take it. We can take pain. We're not fully human. And our fight is to prove that we're human. And to me, it's just a parallel of fighting with older people to try to get them to see something that makes sense, that we have value, that our lives matter. And we shouldn't have to scream to the top of our lungs for you to hear something that's common sense, but that is our plight. So I just wanted to get your idea on that, because that is the frustration of being black in America today, is fighting for legitimacy when you shouldn't even have to do that.
Yeah, you know, listen, I feel that, and I'm with you, and I understand that. I think that, but again, these are conversations worth having, and I think that, you know, I want to thank you for your time today, for coming on my program and wanting to discuss these things, because that's how we learn, Marcus. I tell my students all the time, we don't always have to agree, but I think it's the point, very much to a point you made earlier. I'm a political junkie. I watch the news constantly. I'm on my phone. I'm reading newspapers online. I watch the primetime shows. I watch them. I mean, I'm not going to apologize. I'm a big Fox News fan, but I will watch CNN. I will endure CNN. I will endure MSNBC. I will watch it. But I will watch it. I will watch it because you have to kind of know what both sides of the aisle are arguing, and then you kind of make your own decision by researching after and say, all right, well, I'm not sure about what Chris Hayes said on MSNBC, or I don't know what Chris Cuomo said on CNN, or maybe I don't know what Tucker Carlson said on Fox News. Let me do my own research independently and then make my decision. And there are times that, you know, I'll do my research, and I implore everyone in our audience and everyone, you know, who tunes in, you know, based on, and by the way, I thank you for plugging the show tonight. I know you did a great job on social media pages, and I appreciate that. And I definitely, listen, I'd love to have you back on later this fall to follow up after the convention to talk more about issues that affect the NAACP. And like I said, I'll keep my fingers crossed that President Smith is hearing this episode and that he's impressed enough to come on, because listen, I treat everybody fairly, Marcus. I think I've been very fair with you. I think we've had a great conversation.
I agree 100%.
I think we've had a great conversation. I think it's important to get these ideas out there. And again, before I let you go, folks, don't forget, coming up on Saturday and Sunday, October the 10th and 11th, respectively, we have the NAACP State of Black New Jersey will be the theme this year for their convention. It is virtual, folks. It's not like, you know, obviously other conventions where networking is great, but that's just the times we're living because of COVID-19. Again, folks, make sure you register at www.njscconvention.org. Again, it's on the NAACP page coming up on Saturday, October the 10th. Sean King will be the keynote speaker on the Saturday portion, and on Sunday, October 11th, the Reverend Dr. Corey Jones will be on that Sunday. Again, the theme this year will be the State of Black New Jersey. It'll be a virtual convention. Folks, again, check out the NAACP.org for more information. Marcus, before I let you go, anything else you want to tell our audience tonight before I let you go, brother?
I just want to say I appreciate everyone who's tuning in. Thank everyone for listening. We're an organization who wants to make people aware of what's happening in our house, but we're absolutely aware of what's going on in other people's houses. As Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So we are in tune with many fights, and we are willing to be at the front line on a host of different issues. We just ask for the same exact response. We want to be there for you. We want you to be there for us, and we can get to equality and equity together. So I thank you so much for the time. I had a great conversation with you. I look forward to doing this again. And again, everyone have a great night, and please continue to social distance. Even though we're tired of it, it's not gone. We still got to be safe.
Yeah, Marcus, listen, that's well said there, man. Listen, keep up the good work, bro. Stay safe and healthy. We'll talk off the air, certainly, when I get you back on my Real Talk show with Eisen and Jay. And, hey, do me a favor. Can you tell everyone you know how much you're a fan of Politically Direct and Insider and Jay, please?
Oh, absolutely. I need everyone to tune in to Politically Direct. When you look through the previous guests, you have people from all walks of life, and everyone gets an ample opportunity to share their side as well as to learn something new. So I would absolutely plug this show because this is important. We need spaces where both sides can be heard and the respect can grow and we can grow together.
Marcus, well said, man. I appreciate the plug. Real quick here before I let you go, it is October 1st. It's really unprecedented times, man. It's the first time forever I can remember that we're watching the NBA Finals, Major League Baseball playoffs, the NFL. Any taste, any favorites, any allegiances, you know, you have any of the major sports?
Well, see, you said you're a Cowboys fan, so that means you like pain. I am a Falcons fan.
Oh, God.
I'm a Falcons fan, so I really like pain right about now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Football is done for me. My team is trash. Okay. And I'm a Knicks fan for basketball. So, yeah, I'm going with the Lakers because I like LeBron, but I can't root for anyone because my teams have been trash for a long time.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, these are unprecedented times. I don't think we'll ever see the NBA Finals, the NFL, and Major League Baseball playoffs all in the same month ever again. Hopefully, we never will. Let's just say that hopefully we'll never see this again. But, Marcus, stay safe and healthy, man. We'll talk to you soon here on Politically Direct.
Peace. Thank you.
Have a good one, brother. All right, folks.
All right.
Have a good night, man. All right, folks, 1025 here on the East Coast. What a great interview here. With Marcus Sibley, the communications publicity and press chair for the NAACP in New Jersey. Folks, I tell you know, these are the guests we bring you exclusively here on Politically Direct. And if you missed any part of the broadcast, don't sweat it. You can listen to the episode in its entirety at the top of the hour as it's processed on the website, www.insidernj.com/podcast. Again, you can listen to it from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Folks, that's our show for this week. I'll tell you, a great one again here on the program. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about next week or in the coming weeks, you have a suggestion for a guest or any issues you want discussed in the program, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do read my emails, and I do answer them promptly for the most part. So do write to me, again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, at Politically Direct NJ. I do have to update it. I have an update in a couple of weeks. Make sure I update the guests I've had recently, including tonight's great guest, Marcus Sibley, from the New Jersey chapter of the NAACP. Once again, folks, you can also follow me directly on Instagram, at Professor Fernandy Uribe. Also hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor Appy Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. And, of course, check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, for the best journalism anyone in the state of New Jersey. I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ family. You can check it out by going to www.insidernj.com. Upper right-hand corner, click on the subscribe button. Guess what? When you check your email in the morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. The best journalist, the best columns, the best news source in the state of New Jersey is Insider NJ. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro. Tends to annoy me with a lot of his like liberal talking points on social media, but I'm sure I piss him off too, so I guess it kind of balances itself out. Also, other great columnists include Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflake, even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes really drives me crazy with his Trump derangement syndrome on his columns. But he's a good guy. He's been on the podcast before. I look forward to having him on. But, again, I have great teammates, and I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ family. Again, since Politically Direct has been partnering with Insider NJ since January of 2018. Still going strong, folks, here in 2020, despite the pandemic. So check it out, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. All right, folks, again, happy October. It is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and certainly we'll be doing some things on the podcast throughout October. We'll be featuring some things on the podcast social media pages, and also you might stay tuned for that. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I will be also advocating for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is also in October, as I'll be volunteering once again for Making Strides Against Breast Cancer on behalf of the American Cancer Society. Since 2008, I'm proud to have raised $50,348 for breast cancer research, and certainly we'll be having some segments on this podcast And I'll be featuring some stuff as well on the podcast social media pages. And of course, Insider NJ is proud to sponsor me this year as I continue my annual A Professor's Quest to Save Breast campaign. We'll be doing it online this year virtually. And again, Insider NJ, great job by sponsoring me this year. So we'll be talking about that throughout the month of October. All right, folks, again, you know, thank you so much for joining us here tonight. Enjoy the NBA Finals. Let's go Lakers. Certainly, let's go Yankees as they move on to the Division Series round against the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's go Yankees, and certainly let's hope my Cowboys can get the 2-2 here in the 2020 NFL season. So, folks, have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Stay safe. Again, socially distance. Wear your masks. And I'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.